Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Ann Garner with Cosmic Citizen Saturday Broadcast, and my co-host Dave Tucker is here. Dave, you here?
Good morning, everyone.
And Paula and Crystalline are at the summer study session for readers of the Urantia book in Chicago. And we're going to start. We have to give people time to get in because it takes time to refresh. I like that term. It takes time to get refreshed. And so we're going to start with Pato, Loving Service, Universal Love. That's it. Take it away, Pato.
In a world of so much hate, crime and injustice, what we need right now is some universal love. Unconditional love, y'all.
Welcome back to the Saturday Cosmic Citizen Show with Dave Tucker and Ann Garner. And today we're going to be talking about coming out of the muck and mire permanently of life. Dave, you ready for this one?
Oh, yes, ma'am, I am.
And we're going to play another song because I am getting some texts. You know, I get texts on my cell phone, private messages on Facebook, and all private windows. It's interesting. Folks, we want to remind you that if you're not getting a volume of sound, please press F5 on your computer or if you see the refresh button. We're going to play a song that's so appropriate by my dear friend Robin Hackett. She is familiar with the Urantia book. She travels around the country, around the world now, singing. And it's called Out of the Ashes because we're coming forth like a phoenix. Take it away, Robin, and this will give everybody a time. And now, Dave, I'm going to post it on Facebook that we're live now. And I know you do that also, right?
Yeah, I've just done that.
Okay, I'm about to do it too. Coming out of the ashes.
Up from the ashes, away from your sleep, who'd have believed that you'd rise to see that it's all so perfect, the laughter and the pain, and there's nothing more beautiful than a flower. I saw you wonder, and I saw you down, to think you were lost, but now you are found, and it's so amazing to see you again, and there's nothing more beautiful than a flower. Thank you.
Dave Tucker, what do you think of that song?
It kind of reminds me of Amazing Grace, actually. It had that same type of tempo and feel.
She's pretty amazing.
I really enjoyed it. The words are powerful.
Well, we are here today to talk about, and Robin will come on the air with us sometime. She's so busy on tour. About getting out of the muck and mire of life permanently. And my co-host today, Dave and I are blessed to be doing this while Paul and Crystalline are in the study session in Chicago. And folks, we do want to invite you to join the sister broadcast on Wednesdays, of which I'm honored to be the host. And we really look forward to having you join us. And always remember, you can download the broadcast afterwards anytime. I keep an album on my Facebook page. I'm about to set up a Saturday album also so that people can download and put it on the MP3s. I put it on my Droid now, iPhones or whatever. Dave, we already have a caller, and he can only stay with us a few minutes, and we're going to take this call. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. 613, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello.
Good morning.
Morning,
good morning.
And this is Surinder.
This is Surinder, yes. How are you doing?
Very well. I think we are overlapping with somebody else.
No, sir, you're doing fine. You're doing great.
Okay.
This is my co-host, Dave Tucker. You're doing well.
Hi, Dave.
Good morning, sir.
And
yeah, I'm the first time here, so I will be sloppy, probably I might confuse things, so please bear with me.
Well, let me explain. One of the great sages on Facebook, this is who you're listening to, young Dave, and I immediately recognized his writings, and neither one of us can remember how we became friends on Facebook, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you're a fascinating writer, and just would you share with us, number one, how you chose to become a writer, because you really have come out of the muck and mire. You've gone beyond religion, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. In fact, you can put it this way, that when I got disappointed with religion, and I think it has happened with many other people too, that you start evolving and then you start exploring spirit, and then you have to transcend beyond, because religion basically confines you, puts you into a very straitjacket and wants you to behave in a certain way, and you find that your spirit actually feels restricted, confined. It wants to evolve, it wants to come out. So it's the grace of God that you somewhere get a link and you actually at some stage in very strange way start negating God first, and then you connect with God at much, much later stage.
Well, now your avocation. Would you explain what you've done in your life in the business world?
Okay, all right. I am a professional pilot. I was an airline pilot, and I flew for about 35 years, and I took early retirement. In my earlier years when I was born in India, and I spent half my life there.
What part of India, please?
New Delhi.
New Delhi, okay.
Actually, I was born in Bombay, but that was only a place of birth. I don't belong in Bombay, which is called Mumbai now. And my home place is in Delhi, New Delhi.
Right, and you were a pilot all over the world.
Yes, I flew for 35 years, as I said. But, I took early retirement. I am 64 now, and there are colleagues who are still flying, and they can fly another 1 year. But I took early retirement 10 years ago.
So when did you start writing?
About 5 years ago. You see, I took the early retirement. I wouldn't say this was the only reason to find myself, but it was the primary reason. I wanted to find myself. I wanted to locate my own spirit. I wanted to know who I was. And in my professional life, I was exploring, even in my professional life days, I used to dwell in this area, but not so seriously, and I didn't have much time. So I took the early retirement actually to find my own self. So it took me 5 years of a lot of turmoil, 5 years of, like bouncing against the walls, and then slowly something started dawning on me. It started becoming clear. And then at some stage I started writing, but the book that I wrote did not take its shape much later, actually. It evolved slowly, and I'm not still very happy with what I've written. In fact, I should rewrite, and I can come out with some different reflections, actually.
And would you share just a couple of things that you've written in the last few days? And by the way, Dave, he's going to be a guest on the Wednesday broadcast later this year.
Great.
I'm very excited about it. I've been reading his book, and it's quite remarkable. And it's up to you if you want to talk about which religion you've been a part of. I don't know if you were, I'm sure you were born into that religion. Is that correct?
Yes, I was born in Sikhism.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually did not practice religion in any, visible way. I hold short hair, and Sikh religion expects you to have long hair and support a turban and whatever. I never did that.
Well, Sikh friends don't wear the turban. You know, you can tell by my pictures.
Yeah, yeah. So I was born in that religion, but I was influenced by it by my mother, who was a very devout Sikh. But later, as I grew up, I was not so much interested into the Sikh religion is very heavily centered on Jap. I don't know how to say it in English. Jap is mantras, like reciting, singing, and I'm not cut for that. So I deviated from that. In fact, then I went into Vedanta, and I went to searching Buddhism, and that's where I found most of the answers.
Well, Buddhism is a beautiful way of life. Love it. I love the meditation.
Yeah.
Now, I do enjoy the chanting with the Sikhs. I, as you know, I love the chanting. That's
okay.
My personal opinion. But that's okay.
Yeah.
And I was just recently in Chicago with an airline pilot from Canada, and he flew for Canada, the airlines, and y'all probably know each other. I'll have to think about for a moment what his name is. He just retired. He's Caucasian, Canadian, and we were talking about how we meditate. Also, we were talking about the lack of windows in a lot of office spaces. And he was sitting there, and he said, "Ann, let me show you my office for the last 40 years." And he, on his iPhone, he showed where the sun was coming up, from the cockpit of the jet. Of the plane, and he said, "Do you know how many times I'd watched the sun come up, And so I just thought how wonderful for a writer and a poet to come out of that industry. How many times did you catch up with the sun?
Many, many times. In fact, I think that my evolution into spirituality occurred through visual spectrums of what I saw and what I felt. Now, give you a simple example. When you fly up, say, 30,000 feet and you look down, you find you can see in one glance, you can see the whole city. And you can see, then you realize that there are, if not thousands, millions of people there who are in that space. And you see small little buildings, and each building might have maybe 200, 400 people living in the building. And each person is a story, each person. And you say, in one glance, I am able to see maybe, a million stories there. And then you say, hey, I have a story too, and I am part of that whole crowd that I'm seeing. Actually, I belong there, but I'm distant now, and I'm seeing from a vantage position, and I find, where is this fuss? Where is all this? All these cars running around, and all these people running around. What are they running? Where are they going? What's happening? So this, like a visual impact of seeing what's happening on the planet Earth, in terms of human activity, and at the same time, then you look at the stars and you look at the sky, and you with the clear visibility above the clouds, when you look at it, and you say, hey, this Earth is a small little, not even a pinhead in this cosmos. What is all this fuss about? So this is where the thought rises in your head, you know. So, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. And we do have another caller, 727, hanging there with us just a moment.
Okay.
But would you please share some of your, and I, by the way, I never get tired of hearing stories. When I go places, the first thing I want to hear, tell me your story. I believe that comes from my childhood. We lived in a remote farm. When we would get to one of the main local town, village, my father, we'd sit at the town square or in a gas station around a pot-bellied stove. Now, the other kids would want to go to the movies we did have roller skating or drive, they'd get their parents to, and I'm talking about when I was a little girl. You know where I asked my dad and mom to take me? To the old service station to sit behind the men, or they would include me around the pot-bellied stove, you know what I mean by that, the old fire stove, and listen to them, and they would be whittling. Do you know this term, whittling?
Yeah.
And they would whittle on us, and some of them, being of Native American descent, would actually notch the storytelling notch on the cane, if you understand what it is. Quite a room. And so I never got tired of that. And my dad lived to be 94, and the favorite thing I could do when I'd go home and live on the farm with them, with our kids, is take him up there and we'd just sit. So what you're doing here, you're engaging yourself to know the stories of people. Even from above, you were picking up on the stories. Do you miss flying?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I do miss flying now. I did not miss flying when I went on my search for truth, if you may, my search for spirituality. No, I didn't. I was fully engaged there. And I actually feel liberated in the last couple of years when I have now figured out what I was looking for. I think I have more or less the answers that I wanted. And now I've got a lot of free time. And this is in fact how I'm engaged on Facebook, because I've got a lot of time now. And I think about my flying. And when I think about flying, it's not as a profession or as to fly big airliners. I just want to touch the sky. I feel like going up and...
Do you fly a lot? Do you still go out a lot?
No, I don't really. I haven't actually done flying, though I've been dreaming about it a bit, but no, I haven't. I have to go and refresh my license again. I have to.
But I mean, as far as just going on the planes, because you could sit up front anytime.
Yeah, no, but I don't enjoy. I wouldn't like to be a passenger in a jetliner going
anywhere. Oh, I love that,
Dave. I've traveled so much. I don't like flying anymore now. From that point of view. I want to take a light aircraft and want to go up.
I love to glide. By the way, a trainer of test pilots taught me how to glide. Now that's life. I learned how to fly in a Navion. Most people don't even know what that aircraft is. And the old planes, the biplanes.
How many hours had you put down?
Well, we'll talk about that later. Let's get on the because we do have another caller. I'll go ahead and bring them in because they may have something. Let's see if I can get them.
So I want a quick question from you, Anne. Now, do I stay on this line or I can onto the – sorry?
Yes, you can stay on the line.
Or I can go to the computer and start hearing over there?
Right. You can do it either way. I can because in time – you can stay with us. I'd like to have your input as we go along because I noticed you and our good, wonderful Buddhist Zen monk friend, Jinko.
Yeah.
Y'all have really become good friends, and the way you weave together is quite remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
You're really kindred spirits. And so we're going to talk about some of your writing. But let's see who 727 is. And 727, I can hear you. You're making a little noise there.
Oh, sorry about that. Can you hear me?
Yes. Who is it, please?
Hey, this is Mike Payne.
Oh, hi, Mike. Nice to have you. Mike is a
good morning, brother. Hey, how you doing, Dave?
Mike, you're a second-generation reader, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, we have a wonderful guest, a mystery guest is what I call them, and from India who lives in Canada. And we're Facebook friends. And go ahead, sir, and please share with us some of the context of your book. Surrender.
Are you asking
yes,
me?
Yes, sir, Surrender. Yes. I want to call you Surrender Singh G. Yes.
No, don't. Please don't call me G, and Surrender will be fine.
I know. I'm so
Surrender
used to that.
Is fine. Yeah. Surrender. I'm not calling you Ann G, so.
Okay.
No, Surrender will be fine.
Thank you, sir.
Please go ahead, yes.
So your book, the name of your new book, your book is...
The Power of Raw Thought.
The Power of...
The Power of Raw Thought.
Would you explain that, please?
The Power of Raw Thought. Now, it'll be quite hard to... How do I explain this? In confusing way, in fact, it will appear. Raw thought. You see, let me put it this way. People have understood terms like consciousness. They have understood terms like awareness, presence. These are the words they picked up. In Vedanta, they call it Atman. So these terms, similar to how what you think is awarenesses or consciousnesses, raw thought is a thought on which your consciousness rides, if you may. Raw thought is that. Okay, let me give you an example. You know, in the radio transmission, the transmission occurs on a carrier wave. On top of a carrier wave, modulation is done. And you have either amplitude modulation or you have frequency modulation. And at the receiving end, the receiver demodulates it and takes the intelligence out. Below the modulation is the carrier wave, which is carrying that intelligence. So raw thought is like a carrier wave. Now, because it's a carrier wave and it's not modulated,
yes.
A person who does deep meditation and goes deep inside, to him in the initial stages, this looks like a zero, a shunya, a void. So a raw thought to you as a meditative person in the beginning will look like a void, non-happening. So those people who don't understand it, some of the people who have done deep meditations, if they don't understand what is the texture of the raw thought, then they get very confused. They copy Buddha and they think, I can go into meditation and I'll become void or zero and then I'll get enlightenment. No, enlightenment doesn't occur like that. It's not that you just simply sit down. Some people have thought that they can shut down their mind, and if they can shut down their mind, the enlightening will occur by itself. No, you have to actually initiate it. So if people don't understand what is the raw thought, then they are not able to differentiate between what is the raw thought and what is an idea No, when I'm talking to you just now, these are all ideas. These are formulations on top of my consciousness, which I am now delivering in English language. I could be doing in Punjabi or Hindi or some other language. So is all these languages are modulations on top of your consciousness. What happens to us is that we are so much overloaded with our stuff on top of the raw consciousness, that consciousness is not visible to us. We think I exist and I am a person and I'm a human being and this is my body and this is my story. Basically, everybody thinks I am this because this is my story. The story is imprinted on top of the raw thought. My whole endeavor is to try and find out the raw thought, get lost in it. You will find God inside there.
Now, you were using the term Atman.
Yeah.
Would you describe that from the philosophies that you were born and raised in, the Atman? Because I believe we have a similar concept within the Urantia book, which I doubt if you've ever even heard of the Urantia book until we became friends.
Yes, you are right. I actually did borrow the Urantia book from library, and I was intimidated looking at the size of the book, and I only leafed through a few pages, and I said, look, I'll need a couple of years to read it.
When did you get it
from
the
library? Join the group, brother. Join the group.
When did you get it from the library?
And about 10 days ago, and I actually returned it a couple of days ago. It was on my desk for 8 days, and it just intimidated me. I found profound passages here and there. What I did is I opened the book at random at some page, and I read passages here and there. It's profound, but I said I am not able to do justice to this book in terms of days. I have to have time off somewhere. Maybe I go on vacation and carry the book. And I mean, very frankly, that intimidated me. Yeah.
Well, let me say this. If you just sounded like a true Sikh there, where you just opened it to one page, because that's what you know when you bring forth at the end of the hukam. And that's what I would suggest. If you decide to gentlemen, what would you say to him?
Hey, Ann?
Yes, who? Yes?
I have a suggestion. I'm sorry, I forgot your name, sir.
Surrender.
Think of surrendering yourself to the higher.
Okay, great. Surrender, I think that you may be fascinated with the papers on the thought adjusters because the what was it, the item, the raw talk?
Raw is raw.
That sounds like the transmissions that the thought adjusters receive all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You remember that? Reading that?
The ideal.
Yeah, they receive, help me out, Anne. They receive the universe broadcasts, and then the thought adjuster picks the best of those and tries to translate them to the human mind.
Exactly.
And that raw talk kind of sounds like that.
Yeah, you're already tapping in, and all the if you decide to read the Urantia book, all it'll do is just be a confirmation. And the adjuster papers. I was in Russia in the Moscow in '92, pretty much right after the wall came down, and we started with the adjuster papers because in the old Soviet Union, everybody had, if they were to have an experience with spirit, they had to do it, you might say, they literally were underground, a lot of them. And so they had to find a way, and they were totally mystical and connected very quietly. So then I began to start telling people, start with the adjuster paper. And I still do that because if you tie in and grasp the inner voice, the Atman, am I saying that right, Surrender? Atman?
I'm a little lost, actually. I'm sorry.
The Atman, you're watching the chat. The Atman is the same as the adjuster, what we call the adjuster. That's the spirit within, Surrender.
Okay, all right. You call it adjuster?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Adjuster. Right. It's the spirit within. It's the spirit nucleus.
Okay. Yeah.
So let's get back to what you've written in your book. If you decide, and I'll talk to you later about those papers of comes right after Universe Levels of Reality. But I believe it's paper 107. So go ahead and give us some examples of what you have written in your book.
About Atman?
Yes, sir.
Incidentally, Anne, did you get a chance to read any of my book?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. It's quite incredible. It's quite incredible. And thank you for sending it to me. You know, there are people that want me to read their books, but they don't send it to me. I cannot buy every book.
Yeah, I can understand that, yeah.
Thank you kindly.
Another question. Actually, the subject today was Out of Murk and Life Permanently. We are discussing my book. I just walked in.
But you know what?
Like,
this tying into the spirit is getting out of the muck and mire.
Okay.
Unless you tie into the spirit, you're going to stay in the quagmire of life. So we are on the subject. And you are a fresh voice. We're enjoying it tremendously.
Okay.
Surrender, if I could ask you a question, brother, I would ask not so much as your anything on in your book, but maybe your personal living experience. How would you, if you had a suggestion to live with joy and peace in your life, or maybe your secret to living with joy and peace in your life, how would you sum that up?
Self-discovery, I think, in a simple word, self-discovery. The point is that there is an example in our Indian or Hindu stories. This musk deer is an animal which has got this. I think you know about a musk deer, right? It's
yes,
an animal
yes.
in a forest which has scent in his navel. There's a scent button in his navel, and from which the aroma, a scent comes out. And it spreads in jungle, and anybody else can smell it. But as far as the deer himself is concerned, he smells, it's a story like I'm telling you, it's a kind of giving an analogy, that he smells and he wants to know, he runs after the smell. And he runs all over the forest finding out where is the smell coming out, never knowing it is coming out of him. It is his own navel which is transmitting the smell. Human beings are something like that. That the spirit, the consciousness, Anne gave me a new word, a gesture, is inside you. And your joy is your own joy. All what you see outside are all stimulants, all kinds of outside objects, which you somehow think that my joy is over there. I'll interact with something, I'll achieve something, I'll eat something, I'll touch something. And yes, you get those momentary joys. But again, even those momentary joys, there is somebody inside you who's enjoying them. The bigger enjoyment are the joy, actual joy of yours is when you shut down from outside for a while, you say, I am not going to look at the stimulants. I am going to find my own navel from where the scent is coming out. And if you can look at it, identify it, and close yourself, center it on it, and sit down and say, I am it. You become it. Because when you say, I am it, then you are the smell itself. Then you are not the seeker of smell. You are the transmitter. It's a mind game. If you can do it, if you can't do it, it'll appear as a mind game. If you do it, then it's a self-realization.
So would you say it's joy is more of a consciousness rather than a destination?
Yes, more or less. The point is that even those people who find that I will find joy somewhere, they have to understand that somewhere where they are focused is doing something to their inside, which is realizing the joy. So if you if you see a flower is in fact doing nothing to you. It is your realization that flower is beautiful. Realization is your own property. But if you think that, oh, this realization is coming because the flower exists outside of me and that flower is responsible for beauty, that's how the whole world views. Everybody in this world views like that. The people who have done self-realization, they say, my joy is my own creation. It is coming from me. I emanate it, or it's self-effulgence. self-effulgence, if you can receive, can attain self-effulgence, that's what is nirvana.
That reminds me of a scene, Surendra, I don't know if you ever saw the movie The Matrix.
A long time ago, and I didn't understand much really, though, honestly.
Yeah, because a lot of it has philosophical imagery in it. And mm-hmm. the one scene where Neo talks with the child and the child's bending the spoon, the child says, "Don't think about bending the spoon, that's impossible. Think about yourself bending around the spoon."
I don't remember the scene, but I'm getting the idea what you're saying. Yeah.
I think that's the same idea that you're talking about, is you're making changes to yourself and realizing and learning and growing.
That's right. Yeah. You put it very well. Yeah.
So, Mike, do you have a question to clarify what he's saying about? Because what you're talking about is getting out, and we had some very specific questions about what it takes to, like, for example, I know people that there's dramatic changes in their life. They've lost their job. They've lost their relationship. Like I was with the lady the other night that her husband died suddenly. And she's a powerful woman, but I can still see the grieving process. My question to all three of you is, how do you take hold of life after you've had such a tragedy? Because, you know, that's the only definition I can find, a dramatic shift. And then I want to talk about, Dave, what you've done. You've taken a dramatic step toward moving away from toxic substances in your body and your mind, right?
Yes, ma'am. I've stopped smoking cigarettes on Super Bowl, February 7th. And I just feel tremendously better about that. But recently, I've made the realization that taking in any physical or spiritual poisons is really just being more of a hindrance on my spirituality. It doesn't allow me to properly learn lessons or receive the messages I'm supposed to receive from my thought adjuster from within. I mean, the only way we can learn and progress is by having an open communication. And I've realized that by indulging in physical or spiritual poisons, that all that does is take the process much longer. And one thing I'd like to definitely point out that at least was an eye-awakening moment for me is that, you know, one of the greatest affliction in the cosmos is to have never been afflicted at all. So I think one of the best things we can have is things that are very painful for us to experience, very hard to deal with. One of my favorite passages in the Arantia book is the last paragraph in paper 110, and how it talks about the thought adjuster wanting us to more humbly accept the path that he has put in front of us, and more patiently be able to deal with life's tragedies with grace. And I think that only comes through personal experience with the Father. It only comes with that personal religion. It's not like anybody can pick up a book and within 2 weeks understand this and live this. It's repetitive. It's about choosing to do better. It's about choosing the Father's will over, over, and over again. It's a constant life decision. And for me, I was able to stop using drugs, stop drinking alcohol, stop using smoking cigarettes. I was able to, you know, and I've also made the personal decision to stop watching violence as entertainment.
Right.
All that is a pollutant, you know, all that is a cloud. Now, this isn't for everybody. I mean, I would think if someone comes to that realization for themselves to be like that, fantastic. But it's for me. And you know, in fact, it's really, really hard decision, because I've found that once I've told my friends and family about that, I've actually lost a lot of friends recently because of my decision to not use anymore and to rid myself of being entertained by, you know, physical violence or things of that nature. And it's a hard path, but I knew this was not going to be easy. But what I did also know in the very back of my mind is, you know what? I felt for a long time I was so afraid to rid myself of these poisons because I was like, what am I going to do to fill this void? What am I going to do to fill up this vacuum? You know, how am I going to live? This is something I've lived with my entire life. And it was just an instant realization when I really asked that question and when I really asked the Father for help, it was just an instant realization to me that void will be filled by the Father and it will be filled with better things for my life, something that's going to improve me. It might not be good. It might not be something that's going to be great and fun for me, but it's definitely going to improve me. It's definitely going to advance me in the spirit.
Well, Surrender, what would you say to young Dave Tucker? You're a little bit older than he is. Dave's about 30. Dave, I have been praying for you every night. I've been sending a lot of prayers because when you let go of that many chemical dependencies at one time, you can have some withdrawal symptoms, but it sounds like that you're allowing the power of the Spirit to manifest. Is there anything
and
you would...
I'd like to really point out in 100% honesty, I have not had one withdrawal, not one feeling of need, not one feeling of insecurity, any of it.
You made that high, robust decision, and therefore the spirit within, the pilot light, I think that's another word. I think our brother Dave on the chat room said that you made that robust decision to do it, and therefore the spirit is helping you. Surrender, have you ever seen this with somebody that can drop that many things at one time?
It's hot.
Hey, Ann, I have to hang up real quick, and then I'm going to call back in. I got a bad connection.
Oh, okay, Mike. Okay.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye, Mike. Yes, Ann?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You see, I heard Dave very carefully, with a lot of keen interest in what he's saying. Now, his is a story which is very, very much repeated. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of people who have similar kind of a story. You are dependent on something. You are dependent either on, some are dependent on alcohol or on substance, or some are dependent on relationships. They are dependent on, they are always leaning on something to support themselves. They are, in many ways, some people are even leaning on religion, which kind of in their blind faith on something, some dogma. I'm not saying any one particular religion, but any religion, any dogma, they lean on it. And they find that they are going to find support. So everybody's looking for a support. If you want to give up, like in his case, like he's saying, so many things he want to give up, it's not an easy thing. It's a difficult thing because you have conditioned yourself to depend on something. You were earlier saying about somebody who died and the person is grieving. Now, why the person is grieving? Because the person was heavily depending on that person who died suddenly. So whenever we are depending on something, then we are slave of that thing. That thing is the master, which is driving us, which is making us feel enslaved to that. How do you get out of this? Become a master yourself. How do you do that? Find your own self. When you find your own internal self as a joyous place, then you don't have to depend on the other things. Then you see, the moment you get an alternative in life, then you say, I don't need to have alcohol. I have my own joy. My joy is more intoxicating or equally intoxicating as alcohol was. So you can give it up. But my suggestion to anybody will be, don't do anything very drastic. Take it very, do it. It took you years to become entrapped in these things, and don't expect that you will get out of it in one overnight. It should not happen. If it does happen, it'll shock you. Gradually, slowly, slowly, slowly. And the other aspect, and the other suggestion I can make is, try and analyze this, that all these things that you take, alcohol or anything else, they are all very body related. It's your body which takes a chemical, it's processed, then body feels in a certain way. You feel good, you feel whatever. The center of your ego is, since it is in body, therefore you are liking it. once you get disconnect with the body, once you start saying that I am the Atman, or I am the consciousness, I am the awareness, give it any name, you are distancing yourself from the body, and then you start seeing body as a mechanism. You start seeing this as an instrument. And then if this instrument needs some kind of a fuel, and even if it keeps consuming that kind of a fuel, you say, I am distancing myself from it. The body which is consuming alcohol is not necessarily just me. It is my instrument as well. So it's a certain way of tutoring your mind to get out of these clutches of vices or addictions and things like that. But do it very gradually. Do it very gradually. I would say
that's
if you
what
do
my concern is because the body has gotten used to it.
That's right.
And Dave, how
you,
long
you know, if you,
you
try, sorry,
go
if you
ahead.
Try and break a habit too quickly, it can come as a shock, and then it can also reoccur because at some stage the body will crave for it, and then you will get defeated. And I will tell you something, not even from spiritual point of view, general in life, don't get defeated because defeat itself creates another defeat. Don't create conditions where you get defeated. So if you do something very drastically, actually you are creating a scenario where defeat is a good possibility. If you do gradually, like you have 10 sticks, don't try and break all 10 together. Break one by one, you'll break all 10 of them. It'll take a little while, but pick up one stick and break it. Pick up second and break it. But if you pick up all 10, put together, make it a bundle and break it, you can't break it. So
well,
you are setting yourself out of defeat, you know. Sorry?
Oh, I said, well said, sir.
Well, and Dave, how long did you drink and or do the marijuana, for example?
Well, to be frank, I would only drink during football season. during football season, when my 49ers were playing, I would have a shot at the kickoff and maybe a couple beers.
You were playing football and you were taking a shot of whiskey?
No. I'm a huge 49er fan. So during football season, me and my brother-in-law and several friends get together and watch every single game. But we would always take shots and, have a couple beers. Now, I've always been a lightweight for drinking, so that was not a hard one to give up. It was very, very simple for me because I would never drink at home, or I would rarely drink on social occasions. But I just decided that there's no need for it. But the other one, the latter one you had mentioned, that was daily. I did that daily since I was about, 21 years old. And that one mentally was a very, very scary thing for me to give up because it was my comfort zone. Some people have a glass of wine. I would indulge in this. So I'd come home after working, and I'd kick the shoes off and pet the dog and get ready to indulge and to use. And it was just part of it was a habit, more than anything.
Well,
but
we're going to take a couple of more calls because
sure.
This is wonderful. And I believe Mike is back on the line. Mike, are you there?
I am here.
Now, we're getting an echo with you. We'll check it just a minute. Do you gentlemen hear the echo when Mike is?
No.
No, not me.
Okay, that's fine. We have another caller.
Okay.
We'll take this. I love this. We're having a true study group, virtual study group. 562, you're on the air.
Well, I'm just listening. May I stay and hold and listen?
Yes, sir. Thank you. I see that you did not press 1, and I'll take you off. That's wonderful. Okay. So let's get back. Well, I'm getting a big echo. Mike?
Yeah.
Would you mind calling back again? Because when I hear myself, I'm getting an echo.
Sure thing. All right.
Okay, thank you.
You're right back.
Sorry about that, Mike.
Bye-bye. That's all right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm. It's very difficult to talk when you hear your own, that echo. Okay.
You know, one thing I wanted to get back to is that it was very scary for me to have to want to give that up. In fact, I had avoided at all cost talking to the Father about it because I was so afraid of it. I had known that when I finally would sit down and talk with the Father, be still and be by myself and ask the Father for help on stopping this, I knew that once I did that, it would be fine. I would be okay. But I was just so scared to do it because I just it was a crutch for me. It was something that I had in my life every day. And eventually it came to the point where I said, you know, I'm tired of not understanding the Father to the full potential. I'm tired of being my own roadblock. I'm tired of being in the way of what I'm here to do. You know, I realized at that moment that this life means nothing except for experience. And that's just my opinion. It's my opinion that the only purpose for me to be here is to reveal the Father to others through my personality. And I can't do that. I can't be a living example if I'm going to indulge in this type of in that type of use. So I decided, I said, okay, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to talk to the Father, and sure enough, just like when I had asked the Father for help for stopping cigarettes, he came to my aid, and the void has been filled, and I haven't once considered using, I haven't once considered, oh, was this a bad decision, I haven't felt guilty, I haven't felt anything. Now,
I want to step back, though, the cigarettes, yes, I was able to walk away. I started in college like a lot of people. And around the age of 30, because back then we didn't realize cigarettes would hurt us. And also there's a genetic thing to be considered, the genetic pattern. I know in almost everybody's bloodline, but there are some more than others. There's some of cultures around the world that genetically, alcohol, for example, if you've never drunk alcohol, you take one drink, it's over with. Your body, because you've got that genetic pattern. And, Mike, you're back on the air with us.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Do any of you in your immediate bloodline, have you had alcoholism or drug addiction right behind
you?
Who's saying yes?
Dave, me.
Okay. That's interesting because what... when you were born, was it already there? So see, that's but you know what? That, okay, Mike, Surrender, what would you say to that?
Yes, I tend to agree with you because I don't know how scientifically it'll hold up. I don't know about it, but if you look at people around and then you see that it actually runs in families, like a heart disease runs in families, like alcoholism also runs. If the father was drinking, grandfather was drinking, so somehow this appears like that. And, personally, if you ask me, even from spiritual point of view, I have nothing against anybody who wants to have alcohol, as long as you are the master of alcohol. Alcohol should not become your master. So if you are in charge and your body needs that, it wants to have a glass of wine, go ahead and have a glass of wine. It doesn't come in the way. But only problem is that if you don't remain the master and the substance or the thing becomes the master and you are the slave, that's where the problem is. Otherwise, it's got no link with your... In fact, those people, if you know of Sufis, I think Anne must be knowing about Sufism.
Oh,
all
yes.
of them consume alcohol some way or the other, and they spoke a lot about alcohol. But then it's in control, like controlled... that's how I view it.
Well, it's a form of self-mastery. You know, there's a...
Self-mastery, yeah. Master of yourself.
Yes, sir. If you... Brother Dave wrote... This is another Dave in the chat room. We have the order of Daves with the Urantia readership. But the older gentleman wrote that, you know, in order to replace the lower tendencies like that, and I'll use that term lower, it's just a... that you have to replace it with something else. That if you say, was that Kabir, and we're supposed to have a great Persian mystic call here in a few minutes. I'm going to remind him. He said he would. If you are whatever you love. Now, that's an interesting quote. That's at the entrance way of my house. You are whatever you love. In other words, whatever you focus on, if people say, I'm not going to drink alcohol, they're actually giving so much power by using those words.
Absolutely.
And like the marijuana, Dave, you walked away from marijuana.
Yes.
How long had you been smoking marijuana?
Since I was 20, so about 10 years.
And, you know, Pato personally told me he does not smoke marijuana. Did you know that? Told me that
No,
recently.
I didn't know that.
By the way, Surrender, you would not know who Pato is. He's a very well-known, well, pretty famous reggae singer, and he was born in Jamaica. So, you know, that whole culture is around hemp and marijuana. And I always felt the way Pato has this incredible level of energy, and the guy can go day and night. And plus, his mind is so, his memory is like, it's just incredible. I mean, I could tell him something from years ago, and he sinks. But he's surrounded by it. And so that culture, and I really felt it. But you know what? If someone smokes marijuana, it goes back to what you said, Surrender, that if someone decides to smoke marijuana to relax, and it doesn't affect the way they function in society, that's a private choice.
You're absolutely right.
I really take exception with those. I've mentioned this many times. The federal prisons that I've gone to, where it's all men. I have gone to the all women, but the all men. That's where the spirit had me go the most. The big federal prisons. There are men sitting in the federal prison as we speak for smoking marijuana and then therefore sometimes caring enough sometimes to share with their friends, probably getting some money. They're in federal prison because of that. Surrender, what do you think of that?
I don't know. I don't have an experience on that, really.
Can I share a quote?
Yeah, I want to ask Surrender one more question about drugs, because
sure.
the poppy seeds, right, Surrender?
Yeah.
Do you know a lot of people from where you're from, especially up in the Pakistan, Afghanistan, that partake of that, because there is a medical drug that's an offshoot of that. Do you think that affects the temperament of the people in that part of the world?
I don't have an insight into it. I don't know. I have not personally known people who indulge into it, but I've heard as much as you might have heard. So they do use, and will it? I don't know. I'm not knowledgeable on this, actually.
I like the way he does.
All I know is that, all I know from a very spiritual point of view, personally, I'm willing to forgive all of them. I find that even those people who are into substance abuse or who are even slave of, whatever, alcohol or whatever, I have no quarrel with them, because each person has his own compulsions. Each person has his own story. It's easier to give a sermon to somebody and say, do this and don't do this.
Mm.
We have very complex stories, and everybody is carrying a very complex story, and these stories are so hollow and so, painful in their ways, and people in their own painful stories find remedies, and sometimes the remedy itself becomes a painful, and the story continues, the pain continues. I wouldn't put any person down saying why you do this. I would say, if I can give you an alternative, if I can tell you that I would tell to a person who is engaged into this not to say give up. I'll say, I'll give you a more joyous way. Come with me. I'll show you a new garden. You continue going to the old garden if you like, but I'll show you a new one. If you like it, you may not like to go to the old garden. You might choose not to go there, but I would never ask. So I do a little satsang, and people have their own ideas. There's one guy who came, and he says, you know, I am so addicted on casino, I don't know what to do about it. I said, I have no answer either. I said, all I can tell you is that I do satsang in the evening, and if you find this is more joyous, you will make a choice, and you will say, why should I go there? I get more joy here. But my telling you that don't go to a casino is meaningless, really, because you find your relief in casino. He was asking me, is it evil? Is it bad? I said, listen, these are all your ideas, evil, good, and bad, and man-made definitions to, you know, it's just ideas. You, nothing is evil, nothing is good. Find, you have your own painful story, so you are trying to address it. I said, you come to my satsang because there is somewhere your mind has said to you, there is probably a relief here. This is why you come. You will not come here because I will tell you I'm going to sell you something very good, which is very good for you. No, it is your own perception. You say, I think there is a possibility of a relief. Then find your relief. I can't give you the relief. Find it. So this is what I would say. Anybody who is engaged in it, first of all, I will blame nobody. Whosoever does whatever. This story about our karmas in life is a very complex thing. The life is very random. You can't make black and white definitions here and say this is good and this is bad. It's a very complex place and very random. So people do what they do, and you show them better alternative, they will start doing probably the better thing.
I agree completely, brother. And one thing that I do want to mention is, I agree wholeheartedly with what you said. You should never denounce anybody for doing anything because you don't know their story. We don't know where their feet have been. You don't know the miles they've walked. But one thing I would like to share is a quote from the Arantia book. It's in paper 110, section 5, section 1, paragraph 5. And it says, "The adjuster remains with you in all disaster and through every sickness, which does not wholly destroy the mentality. But how unkind, knowingly, to defile or otherwise deliberately to pollute the physical body, which must serve as the earthly tabernacle of this marvelous gift from God. All physical poisons greatly retard the efforts of the adjuster to exalt the material mind, while the mental poisons of fear, anger, envy, jealousy, suspicion, and intolerance likewise tremendously interfere with the spiritual progress of the evolving soul." Now, what it does is it does not point the finger and say, you who do this, stop it immediately. But what it does do is it liberates us. It gives us truth. It lets us know that by indulging in these type of intoxicants, it does inhibit the ability for us to be able to receive the messages and learn and have that communion with the Father, with God, with the Spirit, with whatever name we have of Him. What would you say to that?
I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. All I'll add on to what you're saying is that I totally agree when you say that it inhibits, it reduces your capability or ability to connect to a higher level of consciousness. It comes in the way. That I totally agree. But I'm talking, I would add on that remedy to it is a complex answer. The remedy to it is not a sermon, really. Sermons make people go to sleep when you give them sermons. They don't want to hear it. Nobody wants to be told some kind of you have to show them an alternative path.
Sir,
some by example.
Gentlemen, I'm bringing another caller in. The great Persian mystic. Rasuli, is that you?
Yes, hi.
Ah, well, you were talking about surrender. You were talking, meet Rasuli, the great artist, the world-renowned artist.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello, Rasuli.
And we were talking about Sufism earlier. So go ahead, surrender. Go ahead, please.
Okay.
I apologize.
Well, we're kind of jumping subjects here. He was in the middle of talking about a way to get out of that. If you could continue your dissertation.
Yeah, basically, I'll sum it up in a short sentence. Like, I think it's a repetitive thing I said earlier too. Create alternatives. So if the alternative is better, you will leave what you are. If the alternative is not good enough, simply giving a lecture leads you nowhere. People may, by listening to a lecture, all they carry home is a guilt conscious. They are guilty and they feel furthermore guilty and they say, I am into dumps, what can I do? I'm basically bad. So my contention here is that I don't want to characterize anybody as bad. I say I'll give you a better alternative, and some by example, some by story, something I'll write, or I pick up your threads and find your own self, find your own comfort zone, because I don't know your story, and I don't even wish to. Personally, I don't want to go into people's personal story. they are, whatever even they tell us, it is only a portion of, it's like a tip of an iceberg. Nobody can tell the whole story. Whole story is a very complex whole story. So they will tell you something, and then we start doing a bandage on that. We say, oh, okay, I'll give you a remedy. No, it doesn't work like that. I say, find your own answers. All I can say is like more like a Zen-like thought. Sit down, be quiet, I'll give you an hour, don't talk, don't ask me questions. You just sit down. So find your answers.
That's from the Bible.
Well,
there's a verse in there that says, be still and know that I am God.
Yeah, you have a guest come in, Anne, and let me just tell you, Anne, as I told you, I have to go, and I will be on the phone another 5 or 10 minutes maximum. I have to go. You know,
thank you kindly for being a part of the broadcast. You brought such a breath of freshness from the Indian culture, and I love, again, that you've moved beyond religion. I know you have the deepest regard, the highest regard, for all the great traditions that began in India. And
yes, I want to thank you too, brother. You're a cold glass of water in the desert of ignorance.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, sir. And a book. What about the book? Can you share the book title on Facebook or something like that?
Yes, I'll suggest that y'all become friends.
Please
that
do.
Way, yes, you've got to see his daily quotes. It's quite remarkable.
Okay, can I just...
hi, Rasuli. Yes, sir.
I was hearing the tail end of that gentleman's surrender. Is that what your name is?
That's right.
Right.
And yours, sir?
My name is Rasuli.
Okay.
Rassouli.
Rassouli, okay.
Your name... And the discussion took me into the zone of recognizing what the whole idea is behind religion, what
mm-hmm.
we call religion.
Yeah.
And I would like to share that with you, at least as my idea. You see, we've been created in order to be creators. That's why we've been, created in the image of the Creator. Because just like the trees, just like the birds, just like every aspect of life, we're here to create. What we get guided is to be able to get out of the way so the creation flow would go through us. So one of the most important things to begin with is freedom. We've got to be free in order to allow the creative process to take place, that creative flow to go through us. So the Creator sends somebody by the name of Moses to teach us freedom. That's all, nothing else. Moses was not about religion. Moses was not about love. Moses was not about anything but freedom, just wanted to free the slave. That became the guide for us to recognize the freedom needs to be looking into a burning bush that would never take place whatsoever. Freedom is Don Quixote chasing the stars. Freedom has no boundary, and this is what we learned from Moses. Then we got prepared in order to experience love. And the Creator sent this other being named Jesus, who was all about love. All about love, nothing else.
Mm.
Nothing. And he taught us what love is all about. Then was the time for the third important elements that we need to be in that flow of creativity, which was Muhammad, who arrived to say, we've got to surrender. The word Islam means surrender. The idea is to surrender. Surrender to the flow. These are the three most important things that we need in order to be the creator. God created us in her own image, and we reflect that.
Can I interrupt just for a second, Anne?
Yes, sir.
I have got to go. I know Mr. Sully is saying very profound things, but I need to go. So I beg your pardon, sir.
Oh, thank you so much, Surinder. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I would have liked to listen to till end, but I need to go. So sorry, very sorry. Huh? Please.
That's no problem. You can always come back and listen later. So what a blessing it is. Thank you, sir, for calling today, and I look forward to you being on the broadcast later this year.
Okay, thank you so much.
Have a nice time at the wedding.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Bye. Okay, Rasuli?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Welcome. It's so wonderful that you're with us today. So please, yes, go ahead with your thought pattern.
Oh, it was just, the tail end of the discussion. I don't know what the discussion was about, but I heard this concept of discussion somehow related to religion, so I wanted to give my opinion what I think religion is all about. Religion is not about anything but the teachings of how to be a perfect human being that we were meant to be. Nothing else. Nothing else. Anything beyond that is gimmicks, is business, is just becoming powerful for some odd reason that it's individual. But we are here to do nothing but guarding, which means do nothing but create. And that is why every time that we create, we are in the most exuberant state of our being. When you go back to your own memories, those times that you have lost yourself completely, that you cannot even identify the self from the spirit and the body, at that point you have become God, and that's the moment that when you think back about it, you were creating. That's why we lose our connection with everything that is an attachment to us, including our name, our love, anything that you think about, we lose the whole thing. We become love. We become the creator. We become the creation itself. And from that point, everything that we do is what I call guarding.
It's called what?
Guarding, G-O-D-I-N-G.
Oh, what an interesting term. Have you ever heard that, Dave?
No.
That is awesome.
I hadn't heard it before either. I just said it.
Well, I want to know what you're painting today. I love to talk to Rasuli, and then he'll take a picture of a painting and I get it on my phone, and I'm like, whoa. This is totally awesome.
If I tell you what I'm painting, is you cannot believe it, but I'll tell you anyway. Somebody, usually I sell a lot of reproductions of my works on the internet.
Right.
These days, prints on canvases, and they look pretty good, and they're large size. They look like they're real painting, and there's no reason to have the real painting if you just want to look at something to enjoy, except that real painting has the energy of creation in it, where the print doesn't. That's the only difference. So anyway, somebody wanted a print of one of my paintings, one of my paintings from Australia. And I had that printed, and I was just about to ship it to her. And I looked at it, and the painting was, the print was telling me to touch it. You know how you get enticed sometimes by luring of something? So it just lured me into, and I started playing around on that print because it's on a canvas with paint and brush, and I'm having a great time playing on it, and I'm going to send that along with another copy of that print to her.
Mm.
So one is what she's ordered, the other one is what just felt to do. And I'm not going to ask for a penny.
Oh, my goodness. Don't you love it?
Oh, yeah. This is
wow.
It. I don't need it.
We do have another caller. I'll bring him in, and we can just keep interacting here if I can get it to work. Sometimes the switchboard... Keep going, Rasuli. I believe this is Rob. Is that you, Rob?
Yes, it is. How are you doing?
Great. So we're really enjoying, I was just saying how much I enjoy talking to Rasuli, and then all of a sudden these beautiful creations. And Rasuli, they're doing another movie with you, right?
Yes. I'm working on this another movie now. It should be a very interesting one. It's like a sequel to The Secret, and the same group of people are doing it. And this time it's more of a actual practice of things, not just theories and philosophy. So,
and they're coming to your home and they're interviewing you. And Rasuli, speak up just a little. You have such a I love it, your voice of you're such a soft-spoken individual, and I enjoyed that. They're coming to your home to interview you, right?
Well, my studio. My studio and my house are about 50 yards from each other. And I've been blessed to have this whole setup, you know, forest-like environment. When you come here, you'll see what I'm talking about, which is only 3 blocks from our major center of Encino. Yet I'm completely away from everything, so I usually go from my home to my studio, from my studio to my house. And the times that I don't even leave my property except to go, you know, either for a talk or an exhibit or watch the sunrise.
And The Secret is really where you tap. I love it. I look forward to being there soon, by the way. I'm going to be sitting there with you when we do some broadcasting. The Secret and now the follow-up, it really does have to do with what we're talking about today, to find that secret place of moving away from living in the muck and mire of life. And I know, Brother Dave, you had mentioned, we're totally on topic. Is there anything specifically you want to address, Brother Dave?
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to say hello and welcome, Brother Rob. I also wanted to kind of bring up the source, because I think one of these questions that we've had on topic is just amazing. And I want to bring it back up, is how can I make a true connection? How can I tap into the source that gives me power? And I think all of us who have a personal religious experience have our own versions, but I'd like to hear what Brother Rob has to say or Brother Rasuli.
I was impressed by the comment that Rasuli just made recently about Islam being the act of submission to the will of God.
Yeah.
And I think that this is... there's an interesting, you know, Jesus, in the Ranch book, it teaches that Jesus's essential gospel is basically a living personal relationship with the indwelling thought adjuster and learning to do the will of God, and that it centers on that. So essentially the prayer was, you know, not my will be done, but your will be done. And in Islam, I was reading, this is a book I mentioned before, it's by John S. Espinito. He wrote a book called The Future of Islam, and in there, in one part, he talks about this woman named Sarah Joseph, who was the executive editor of Amel, a Muslim lifestyle magazine, and in there, she makes a point of pointing out that, you know, at some point, or in some cases that people move from being a Muslim as the small m to being a Muslim as the big M, and understanding Islam as an institutional religion versus a personal path in doing the Father's will. And she goes on and she explains that, you know, it, basically Islam is the surrender of the self to God's will. And she basically describes it in terms of, in Arabic, that the word mu in front of the means basically the one who does, and Islam means surrender. And so so you have mu plus Islam, which equates to the one who self-surrenders to the will of God.
Wow.
And that's essentially what Jesus' gospel was all about. And yet we see oftentimes from the more literalist or traditional Christianity, they tend to view Islam as this, you know, belief structure.
Even monsters, most people.
Well, there's a lot of Islamophobia out there. But what I'm trying to get at is that if you can draw down to this basic level of this is what it's about, you see that really the teachings of Jesus are perfectly compatible with Islam and vice versa.
There is no issue of compatibility. The issue is about fulfillment of an idea, a concept. They're all needed together. They don't repeat each other. Nothing. You know, the stories repeat each other, but the concept behind the whole thing is two different things. You know, throughout the whole book of Quran, there is not a single word of love.
Say that again. We're certainly throughout the whole Quran?
The whole Quran, there is not a single word of love.
Not a single word that says love?
Yeah, that's it.
Is that right?
There's no word love.
Now, when you quote from the great poets...
Wait.
Sir?
Don't judge. Just listen to what I'm discussing, and then we'll get deeper into it.
Yes, sir.
There is no word love in it because Islam does not need love. There is no concept of love in Judaism because Judaism doesn't need love. Judaism is about freedom. We're not comparing with each other. There's no reason to compare. These are three major concepts that a human being needs: freedom, love, surrender. One without the other is absolutely missing something. We need that. We have to have the freedom in order to experience love, and we have to have the love in order to surrender. And once we surrender in the flow, we become God. We become that perfect human being. We become the Christ. This is where the concept is. So it's not comparison. It's not about, no, you're wrong, I'm right. The problem is that we don't recognize that. You see, a Muslim is to surrender. But unless the Muslim knows that I've got to surrender to love and freedom, then he would surrender to some jerk who would tell him to go blow yourself up along with other people, because then you go to heaven. This is where the problems are. We've got to recognize that these are not to be competing against each other. I'm not to be either a Jew or a Muslim or a Christian. I am to be it, the whole thing, Jewish, Muslim, Christian. Put me aside from asking me what my religion is. My religion is to be in the flow of the creative power. And I accept it. I accept those who've come in here to guide us.
That is fantastic, and everyone needs to think about that. Everyone in the Urantia that are students of the Urantia book need to think about that.
And yes, and the reason, Rasili, I will repeat things is just to make sure that we're understanding, because you're speaking from the depth that most people do not speak. And that's why I will interject and repeat, because what you just said, freedom, okay, let's start out with the oldest. Yeah, Judaism, freedom.
Love, surrender.
Love, surrender.
You cannot even replace him. You cannot have Jesus come first, because it won't work. you've got to be free in order to experience love.
Wow. Wow.
I have to also mention, I'd like to say, is that that's a very advanced truth. And someone who does not have even, or someone who's beginning to build a relationship with the Father, that's something that they're not going to comprehend until they've reached a level of understanding. For a lot of people who are just starting off in either spirituality or religion, that might be a little too advanced for them. But it absolutely makes sense, and it absolutely rings true to me personally, and I can wholeheartedly agree with it. But that message is a hard message to push. One of the easiest messages to push is the good news, and that is that we are all a child of God. God is the creator, our Father, the creator of all, and we are all his children. Once we can embrace that, we're able to then be able to work on brotherhood and understanding that, you know, all of us are God's children, and we, no matter what religion, no matter what faith or belief, we are all God's children. Even those who don't agree with God or who don't recognize God, they are still a child of the Father, and they have eternal potential, you know. So this message that you're spreading, absolutely, most of your answer book readers, or at least people who've read the entire book once, I think can comprehend what you've just said and take it to heart and live with that. But people who don't, people who just periodically browse the pages or maybe, you know, just read on certain sections, I don't think that's something that they would be able to grasp until they've come to a certain comprehension level.
I agree, Dave. I agree with Dave and Rasuli. And Dave, yeah, you have to show them the door in order for them to appreciate the door and then to open the door and go in and start. And then Rasuli, the surrender, I mean, if you've read the whole Urantia book, you know that those concepts are in there. You know, I can just throw one quote out of there saying, while the work is important, the self is not.
Right.
If you lose yourself in your work, then you can get the work done.
And the self, the losing of the self happens when you're free, you're in love, and you can surrender. Otherwise, you won't. You cannot lose your... If I'm not free, I cannot lose myself. I don't care what you say, what anybody says.
Right.
If I don't have the love, if I don't have that desire, that draw, that attraction that pulls me out of me, then I would not leave me. I need some attraction outside me. I need to develop that desire. If I don't have desire, I don't even get out of bed in the morning. I need to have something to attract me.
You need something to attract you?
Yes.
Wow. And what attracts you personally, Rasuli?
Beauty attracts me.
You go walking. I know you walk on the beach every day, right? The mountains, you go up to the mountain and watch the sunrise.
I climb the mountain to watch the sunrise on Sunday. See, the Sunday I have to be given everything and meeting my God, which is the one that I can connect with directly, and that's the sun. I'm from the earth, and the earth is from the sun, and what created the sun is beyond my comprehension, so I just assume that there is something outside there. But what I can make the connection with is the sun, and I go sit, I climb the mountain in the dark. And I reach the peak, it's still dark, and I sit there and wait for the sun to rise, give light, and when it comes up, I kneel in front of it and ask that incredible power to burn out every ugliness which is inside me. That's all I need, just ask it to burn out. I don't want anything from the sun. I don't need it.
You don't want anything what?
From the sun.
Ah.
I don't need anything from the sun. I just need the sun to burn up what is shade what is dark inside me. And with that intention, I sit there for 2 hours and just allow my whole inside to be, you know, empowered by the divine light. And when I come down the mountain, I feel like I'm just lying, and I come to my studio and I paint, and sometimes I paint for 24 hours or 36 hours in a row without interruption, because there's so much energy, so much power inside me. And every time darkness comes, every time something wrong comes, I just go right in the sun, stand in front of that incredible love of mine, and I ask that power to burn out this darkness. Burn it out.
Wow. That's wonderful. You know, I want to interject quickly. We do have another caller from another country.
Okay, I'm almost sure it's another country. Well, yes, we'll take this caller. The number appears. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Yes, who's calling? Hello.
Are you coming to me?
Yes,
yeah.
Sir. You're not from another country.
Okay.
There's a gentleman from the from another country that was going to call. Who is this, please?
This is Nathaniel from California.
Well, that is another country.
Another country.
But I didn't know. I was interested to listen to the gentleman speak. Do you do any readings at all, or?
Do you do? Are you asking Rasuli if he does any readings?
Yeah, I don't know if.
I don't know if that terminology. Would you explain that terminology, Nathan?
I guess it's just mystics. It said that you do some mystics, so I don't know if that meant.
Right, Rasuli, you do get inspiration when you are talking or you looking at someone. I know that you move in those gifts, and. And I really appreciate that. Do you have a question of Rasuli, Nathan?
Yes. Is there anything spiritually he could see shining through from the sun or for me? Or there's some sayings of may the long time sun shine, you know, on or something?
Oh, I'm not into... finalizing things. I'm into the flow. I can just carry on. I don't even remember what I said earlier. It's so interesting, as Brother Ross, am I right?
Well, that's being in the now time, and I think it readings go from, you know, either in the past or the future or something, and they go out of the now time, so it's kind of from the darkness.
Say that again, Nathan, please.
You know, you come out of the now time when you do a reading. You know, you go into the past or the future. And if you, you know, to ask someone to do that, to go out of the now time is kind of from the darkness.
See, when we're outside the dimension of life, we don't experience time anymore. So we're in the timelessness. In that timelessness, many things happen. So it's not really readings don't relate to the past or present or the future. It's about being connected with a different dimension that is beyond our time dimension. So it, when you ask me about do I do readings, I cannot answer that, because that categorizes a certain part of the flow. But
once you name the Tao, it loses. It's not the Tao.
Exactly.
Like that.
Brother Rasuli, could you speak up just a little bit? We're having some trouble trying to hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I'm getting some feedback. Does anybody else hear? It's not Rasuli. Go ahead, Rasuli. Yes.
Well, that's, I don't know what I was saying, but, oh, yes. what I was saying, that what I was discussing about the three religions, it's the first time that I was doing it. I heard it myself, and I was hoping that it's been recorded so they could write about it later. Because, see, I don't think of things ahead of time. I don't have any knowledge. I don't like knowledge, period. I've got rid of it as much as I can. And I try to get rid of it more and more because I want to get rid of what anything that I carry with me. I want to be it, in it. Knowledge is something. It's not from.
Okay, who's making the noise?
Not me, and not anybody on my side.
Okay.
Knowledge is like driving an automobile. That's the value of it. When you know how to drive the automobile, you don't need to keep on telling yourself, okay, turn 22 degrees here, step on the brake with that amount of pressure, you know, those type of things. You don't.
You're in the flow. And the same with a motorcycle. If you know how to do it, it's you really can't explain. Like, I had a motorcycle a few years ago, and a car popped out in front of me, and it had been years since I had laid down a motorcycle. But when I had to do it, I actually was able to lay down the motorcycle, and when the car didn't come up, I was able to pick the motorcycle back up in air just by being in the flow.
Wow.
Because a car pulled right out, and I stopped, and I, like, looked like I was going to lay the motorcycle down, and I had it there, but the motorcycle stopped, so I quit laying it down, and the motorcycle just went back up on its two wheels. And it was just, wow, you know, and I was kind of scared the bejeebers out of me, but it was just being in the flow. If you could be there in your body in the flow, I think you can manage a lot more. Is that the conclusion?
What frightened you? Your own power frightened you.
It really did after that happened.
Yeah, you were not frightened of what was in front of you. You were frightened of your own power. My God, am I powerful? That scares me, you know?
Hey, God, I was able to do all that without even knowing. Or I did know, but I hadn't laid down a motorcycle for 30 years or more. So,
you know, I had a similar experience sailing. I almost, it's just a miracle that I'm still here. All of a sudden, a huge gale came up twice in my sailing career on a catamaran. And catamarans are, you know, wonderful, but they can also be pretty interesting. And I was by myself, and I was hitting the rocks. I was going to hit, it was more than rocks, the dam. And I had supernatural ability given to me, because it's not easy to deal with a catamaran when, if you're, you know, the pontoons when you're alone. But I will tell y'all, I've told this, I don't know if I've ever told this on the airways, and Rasuli, you might tell me what happened. One of those incidents is I'd spent the night on a lake west of Fort Worth with a couple, and I slept on my boat, a catamaran. You know, I slept on the canvas and under one of the main sheet, the main sail. So the next morning, I love to go out when the sun is coming up, and it was just a light breeze. There were no clouds in the sky, and I get out there, and suddenly the largest, it started white capping, and I realized that I tried to come about, and I could not turn into the wind. So your only choice, and I was headed straight toward the jagged rocks, so the only choice is to what we call jibe. You come with the wind. And then it threw me off the boat. It slung me. The boat completely turtled. There was nobody else out on that lake. I remember losing one of my tennis shoes because I'd been hiking. You know, I was hiking out. Suddenly, a very well-built, blonde, blue-eyed man popped up out of the water. And he lifted me up out of the water. Now, I was in deep water. And he said, breathe. And he had this incredible voice. He said, just breathe. And I had on my life jacket, but still with white caps, you can't, you know, get enough water, enough air. So I took some deep breaths. He says, I'm going to lower you now. In hindsight, how was he lifting my entire body out of the water? So then he puts me back down in the water, and he goes under the water and pops those sails free, you know, because if you turn the boat over, it'll go completely off on its own. And then he turned it over like it was a matchstick. And then he lifted me up on that big catamaran like I weighed 5 pounds. Then he jumped up there. He just leaped. And I was so weak, and I was trying to look at him, and the sun was in my face. Meanwhile, the what you would call the equivalent of the Coast Guard, you know, the lake guards, they saw my sails pop up, and they were headed out toward me. People were looking for me by now. And I heard them coming, and I turned around and looked toward that boat, and I turned around, and he was gone. And when they jumped on the boat, the other people, I said, "Where'd that man go?" They said, "There's nobody else on the lake." Who was that man?
I don't know. Who was that man is one thing, which I'm not that much interested in. Because
sir?
To figure out. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. What? Yes.
You know, who was that man is not as interesting to me as what was the purpose? Why did I get saved that way? Why did I got into trouble that way?
Mm.
And why did that being showed up to save me? This is what is important to me. You were saved on that day. Your life changed. Somebody took your life away and gave you a new life, telling you that from this moment on, this is your mission. From then on, if what you're doing right now with your bringing different people with different backgrounds together through your insha is what you were supposed to do, and that was guided by that power that had those blue eyes and you know, blonde hair and lifted you up as if you were only 5 pounds. This whole thing is the truth. The rest of the things that we do is the dream, is the fantasy. The truth is just that. That moment you were told your mission, you starting here, whatever has brought you so far to that moment that you, you know, you got into that condition, that's gone, that's finished. Now you are this. That's why when I talk anywhere, I ask him not to introduce me. There's no introduction.
There's you're not introduced?
No.
I love it.
I just go in there. The only thing that they do is they show several of my paintings on a large screen, wherever there is, and if there is no screen, I won't even go there. So they show a few of my paintings in there, and then I go, and we talk. And then my talk usually starts with, okay, is there any question? And my talk is basically the energy of the group that are there. I have no preparation. I have no idea what I'm going to be talking about. And I have no idea what I said. Somebody later on, you know, has written it down, has recorded it or something, and they send me, and I never get a chance to even review it because I'm too busy moving forward.
Wow.
So that day, your mission was placed inside you. That whole thing happened because there was a touch. Was a touch.
This guy's full of himself.
Yeah, so you see that? You see what, Nathan? Nathan, are you there?
Yes.
Nathan, what he has done right there is what you just said. He is, by the power of the Spirit, he is reading the, somebody's mumbling. Who is it, please? Because we can hear you mumbling, and that's, if you want to say something, that's fine. If not, we'd appreciate it if you wouldn't do that. We all have our own opinions, but you can speak it out openly. So what we have here, we had invited Dave Tucker. We had invited the concept of the true mystics, of those that tap in, and we've heard from definitely we've heard from two today, right, Dave Tucker?
Oh, yes, Brother Surrender and Brother Rasuli.
What a miracle for this to happen. And so what you've done, you moved outside, Rasuli, you moved outside of time and space. And, you know, and you moved into that space with me because I remember that morning vividly. I can see it. It was before I even got married. My husband was flying in from either China or Europe, and it's a miracle. And now my choices that day was I never got on a catamaran by myself because that's a choice. I had to make a decision. Am I going to take a chance with fate again? And Rasuli, I've said this before about you, and I know it in a very real way. You have moved beyond that space of ego. You've moved beyond. You don't have anything, any agenda. When you come on the broadcast, you've taken of your time. You don't have to do this. None of us do, but like the gentleman that called in earlier. And people that show up here in this space and this time on the broadcast, either calling in or in the chat room, if there is an agenda, it's sort of like Surrender talked about earlier, the odor, right, Dave? He talked about the odor. If you smell an odor, I smell a sweetness. I can literally right now smell the sweetness of a lavender or some of the beautiful flowers. I can literally smell it right now. If someone is listening and they sense, well, this doesn't smell good. Dave Tucker, we learned today, where's that odor coming from? Remember what Surrender said about that, the belly button, the man smelled a bad odor?
Yeah.
Where was the odor?
Well, the odor is within.
Yeah, and that's what I love about those who move with the power of the Spirit. They see beauty. Rasuli, I'll ask you a question. Mike, are you still with us? Mike may have muted his phone. Rasuli, do you ever, when you're walking out and about, going shopping, when you come across a scene, you're from a part of the world where there's been a lot of destruction. Do you see ugliness in anything?
I got to tell you about experience I had the other day. I was watching the sunrise over the Pacific, which is very interesting because there's a little peninsula that is called Point Doom. And that goes into the ocean, and I go to the end of that, and there's a little hill there, and I watch the sunrise from there over the ocean at this time of the year, a little bit earlier, but now you won't see it over the ocean anymore. Anyway, I was there, and I watched the sunrise, and then as I was, you know, going through my whole meditation in there, that smell, the odor from the ocean came up. That smell of fish and all these, you know, birds and everything together. And I thought, wow, what a terrible smell. And suddenly I caught myself right in the middle of that feeling, telling myself, this is the smell of life. Breathe it, because this is life. And I began to breathe that in. And guess what? That smell became a delicious aroma. And I
missed I think for a lot of people on their spiritual path, there comes a time or a comprehension level where you can sit back and say, wow, I exist. I don't have to exist, but I do. I have consciousness of being alive. And that embrace, to me, is pure thankfulness, realization that, you know, oh my gosh, I have the ability for free will, I have the ability to breathe and laugh and cry, and no matter what happens to me in my life, I have the ability to choose to react to it negatively or positively. And I think it's inevitable that anybody who builds a personal relationship with a higher being, I call him the Father, is going to come to that type of consciousness one day or another.
And I got to tell you, even the negativeness, what you call the negativity, that is needed as well. This is a part of...
We do need the polarity of the negative?
Yes, exactly. We need that. We need sleeping people to have the awakened ones. If
yeah.
we don't, then it doesn't work. That's a part of life itself. This is supposed to be. This is the part of existence. This is divine. This is the way it's supposed to be. It's our judgment that says this is wrong or this is right. What is there is supposed to be there. It's a part of the breathing, the times that we breathe in and the times that we breathe out. And with that act, we create. That whole purpose of creation begins right there as we breathe in and we breathe out. We breathe in oxygen, and inside us, we turn that oxygen into carbon dioxide, and we put it out, which is needed for life. That is the creation that I started the moment I was born. This is acting, you know, this is my guardian that begins right there. Breathing by itself is an act of creation. It's the greatest act that we do as human beings. So, am I putting out carbon dioxide in order to poison the world? No, I'm not. Who says that I'm poisoning the world? Poisoning the world is a judgment.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, Dave, that's an interesting statement he just made. Because here I am, I've been burning a lot of fuel because of doing the Parliament of World Religions. In 2 days, I've burned a full tank, and my husband loves the old Chevrolets because he's a Texas man, and that's, you know, General Motors has a large plant here. It really is one of the main plants. And I talked to him this morning. I said, I'm really concerned about putting that out into the atmosphere. Rasuli, you just gave me an interesting point of view there.
Well, in your cases, you're doing something outside your beingness. It's your automobile that is doing it. It's your belonging. don't get them confused. Your belonging is doing it. The only way that you could compensate for it is to put the opposite of it in the world as well. You put out this new gases or whatever it is, and find out how you can do the opposite of these gases. The exact amount, and then put it out there, and then you're even in that. That's not a part of your beingness. That's a part of your attachment.
And the amount of carbon dioxide that we put out through our breathing is not comparable to what we put out through our Chevys. if you could do that same feat, if you can still go to the World Parliament and do it on something that didn't pollute the Earth, well, I would assume that most people would take that route. Right now, we don't have it on a mass scale where it's available to everybody, but hopefully the future does, you know, plan this out. Because, I mean, we're just borrowing this planet from our children. This is not our planet.
But you don't pay attention to this money here. We're doing that, and we're saying that we don't have technology to do other things. We're just doing this whole thing. But if all the effort that we put in there to discover the technology to do it other way, we went into creating something that offsets that odor and that gases. If we create something that offsets that, we've already compensated for it. That's good enough. We're destroying it, and at the same time, we're building it. So that's fine. It's not, see, this is a doingness that is outside our beingness. In that doingness, we have to do our undoingness to offset it. If I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, that's what, you know, is one thing, what my beingness is missioned to do it is one thing. But what I'm doing because of my ego is something else.
Wow.
My ego is making me to, you know, cut down the trees. Why? Because I don't like the shade of the tree, or I don't like because it sheds leaves on my property or whatever. That's my ego saying that. I'm not supposed in here to cut down trees. The gardener is supposed to cut down the trees, not me. And the gardener is the greatest gardener that exists, which is the divine power by itself.
Nature.
That's
yeah.
the one that does that. So
we have another caller at the last minute here, and I'm so glad because Rasuli, she's going to be a guest coming up in August. And I believe this is
hello?
Dr. Karen. Dr. Karen Holly, hello.
Yes, I'm here. I'm here. How are you? It's great to be on here and to have an opportunity to say hello to everyone.
And
welcome, Dr. Karen.
She moves with the gifts of the Spirit. And Karen, when you come on the air in a few weeks, we're going to discuss your book, and I love what it's called. Would you, the name of it?
It's Ask Dr. Holly, Therapy in a Flash. I'm a psychological therapist local in the Dallas area, and it is a compilation of where people have written for advice. I write an advice column for one of the local newspapers. And so it's an exciting opportunity when I come on the air to have people who call in and to ask questions. And for me, it's just give them some advice, some psychological advice. And I also serve as a senior pastor of Lifeway Church of Dallas. So it's a spiritual and psychological combination there.
Well, we're going to be blessed. You will be on the air August the 11th. Rasuli, meet Dr. Karen Holly.
Hi, Dr. Holly.
Okay.
And we're trying to work it out.
You?
We're trying to work it out, guys, where she can come to L.A. when I come out there August the 17th, because I do have a beautiful home to stay in. Karen, tell them when your birthday is. Tell them when your birthday is.
My birthday is August 21st.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Okay. That's it, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
Celebrate your
yeah.
birthday in my studio,
yeah.
or maybe.
Did you hear what he said, Karen? We're going to celebrate your birthday at Rasuli's Art Studio.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. I must make it.
Well, you're going to
make
it. I haven't had time to check the tickets. But we're going to actualize another very, very, very reasonable ticket.
Okay. That's what we need to do. So I can make it so we can be at the celebration at the studio.
Absolutely.
And an opportunity to meet you as well. So I look so forward to that.
Wonderful. Me too.
Yes. Yes. So, Ann, thank you, and I look forward to my debut on August 11th.
And I'll call you back because yes. I know where you are,
okay.
and I'll call you back to go through some things.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay.
I love you.
We'll talk
love
soon.
You.
Okay, I love you too. Bye-bye.
If I can get into a brief thing that the master said, it kind of ties into what Brother Rasuli has been mentioning, is the master said that this world is but a bridge. You may pass over it, but you don't need to build a dwelling place upon it. But I do feel that we have an obligation to preserve it for future generations.
How beautiful. How beautiful. Thank you. Wow.
Well, gentlemen, we are down to, as they say in racing, we're down to the wire. And we're going to end with one of my favorite songs that Pato does with the gentleman, Let There Be Love. It's totally a reggae song. Are y'all okay with that? Now, some of you may lose the sound, but when you do the replay, you'll hear it. Gentlemen, I'll see you August the 17th that week, and we will have a lot of beautiful times together, worship, prayer, meditation, walking on the mountains. God bless everybody. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Rasuli. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, everybody. Thank you all.
Peace and love to you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Love and light. Bye.
Bye, Rasuli.
Let there be love. Although RBX and PB is an anomaly,
you can choose your friends, but you can't choose family.
From the UK to LA, from Trinity to JA,
one blood holds you down all the way.
So we move with a force that just don't cease,
bringing peace to the east, hoping love increase.
Yes, peace is the dream while love is the thesis.
Has sparks in your mind like telekinesis.
My brothers are dying
and mothers are crying.
It's time for a change.
Like you don't stand up.
Each one teach one.
We all need a hand.
United
up.
We stand.
And divided we fall.
Like all for the one.
And one for the all.
Together we can make it through.
True.
True.